And part of faith formation and evangelization is literature and history and culture and film, which is why this is such a wonderful opportunity for us this evening. And Tom Mackle, the president of the book club, has arranged the evening. Tom Mackle.
Thank you.
And accompanying Tom is Monsignor Porrick Loftus, our pastor emeritus, and Father Dave Wharton, our pastor, is here. And on his behalf and behalf of the staff, I welcome you. This evening, we have the pleasure of hearing from Marie Claire Kendall. She's a Washington-based writer, a columnist on Hollywood, and she has regularly contributed to Forbes and Breitbart. She has written features and commentaries for the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times, the New York Daily News, the New York Post, Washington Times, our Sunday Visitor, and Catholic New World. So on behalf of St. Mel, I will welcome Marie.
Brian, thank you. Thank you so much. And I apologize that I'm late. You know, has anybody ever relied on MapQuest and found out they're not exactly on the money with with their directions? And I should have gone listened to my instincts, because I've come visited Father Loftus how many times from different places, and this is what this book is kind of about, these stars and how they came to rely on their instincts. So thanks. Thanks for the lovely introduction. It's wonderful to be here in Los Angeles, the film capital of the world, where the legends we've all grown to love and admire make that Hollywood sign the internationally recognized symbol of cinematic excellence, including Joe Tracy's grandfather, which we'll get to that later. As they graced the screen and touched our hearts, bringing dynamism to our lives, their lives were largely two-dimensional. Oasis, that's the name of my book, Oasis, Conversion Stories of Hollywood Legends, brings a whole new dimension, the dimension of their humanity and the journey of faith. This has been quite a journey for me. I teed up this book tour last week in Pinehurst, North Carolina, home of golf. Last Wednesday, I was in Washington, D.C., speaking at the Catholic Information Center just a few blocks from the White House. On this journey of Oasis, I am so grateful to so many, including Mother Dolores Hart, who wrote the foreword, and some 50 years ago, she was being groomed to be the next Grace Kelly. But then she was wooed away by her prince, excuse me, the King of Kings, and after 50 years in consecrated life, she is truly a mother to me, with such love and concern to me and many others, me particularly, I'll tell you about that later, to whom she gives so much through her hidden contemplative life, excuse me. I want to also thank in a special way your pastor emeritus, Monsignor Padraic Loftus. Porrick.
Porrick. The spelling is not the same.
I know, it's just like
The D is not pronounced in the Western dialect.
Oh, Porrick. And how do you spell Sepulveda? How do you pronounce Sepulveda?
Sepulveda.
I'll never get that one right. Okay, Father Monsignor Porrick Loftus, for allowing me to tell the wonderful story of how it was that he came to become Ann Miller's friend and to baptize her in the waning moments of her life. It's a beautiful story. Thanks to Joe Tracy, grandson of Spencer Tracy, who granted me the rights to the never-before-published photo of his father and grandfather around 1927, and he's with us here tonight. Thanks, too, goes to Father C. John McCloskey, Charles Scribner III, Fred Barnes, Ron Masick, who I understand was a parishioner here, or is he still? The late A.C. Lyles, and many others, not least of which my publisher, Franciscan Media. There's one more special shout-out, and I need some cold water for this one because I usually get emotional here. Can somebody give me some water? I'm serious. My parents, Paul and Claire Kendall, without whose unconditional love, this is where I start crying. And water, I'm told, cures that. Paul and Claire Kendall, without whose unconditional love, this book would not have gotten to square one. More water. A year ago, almost to the day, I told my mother I had decided to dedicate my book to her grandmother, Lillian Webster Kane, who lived in Washington when it was just a sleepy southern town. Lillian raised my mother after her granddaughter, my mother, lost her mother when she was just 6 months old. That's kind of complicated, but my mother's mother was 6 months old, and she was cradling her in her arms, and she, her heart stopped. And Lillian, whose mother died when she was just three, found solace in the Catholic faith of her stepmother. That was amazing, because her husband, her father, was a 33rd degree Mason. That's, anyway, her, the Catholic faith she found lightened the burdens of life, she wrote in her diary. My dear mother, my best friend, died quite unexpectedly. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And tragically, on the 49th anniversary of my great-grandmother's death. Thank you. Last July 15th. And so my book is dedicated to my mother as well. Shortly before she died, as I was deep into the Lana Turner chapter, I asked her if she would have liked to have been a Hollywood star. She said yes. While she may have just been trying to connect with me, she was always connecting, letting me know she understood. Without question, she had star quality. She was beautiful, and such a natural beauty. But I and I'll show you a picture later, you'll see. But I assured her, even if married life was not always a bowl of cherries, she was blessed. She had eschewed being seduced by the possibilities her beauty and youth held out. Perhaps, yes, even heading to Hollywood here, following in the footsteps of those she was often compared to, Donna Reed, Ingrid Bergman, and others. As glamorous as it all was, I assured her she had gotten the better deal. The truth is, the lives of the stars I write about in Oasis were difficult, exceedingly so, all the glamour and celebrity notwithstanding. But in the process of severing the slings and arrows that only Hollywood can thrust stars away with such precision and sting, God was forming them, priming them for the time when they would finally look up and ask for his help. Because really, that's all God wants any of us to do. He loves us so, but stubbornly we want to do it ourselves. Then comes the crisis. Most of the stars I write about experienced some kind of crisis that brought them face to face with their human weakness and their need for God. It's just that simple. In writing about these stars, I write about their life stories, not just the crisis and denouement, because you can't begin to understand someone unless you know where they came from, what they achieved and how, what their weaknesses and strengths were, and how far they fell or merely drifted, to understand how incredible their journey and discovery of God was. I look at these stars through the lens of their humanity to tell their story, the very beats and arc of which show how they were transformed by faith. In so doing, I am attempting to transform your understanding of these legends, helping you to see them in a whole new light. As my friend Harry Flynn, who was a publicist to many stars, including Bob Hope, said, Oasis shows the soul behind the billboard. It shows them like you and me, human beings, after all, with an immortal soul. My book includes an all-star 12, Alfred Hitchcock, Gary Cooper, Bob Hope, Mary Astor, John Wayne, Ann Southern, Jane Wyman, Susan Hayward, Lana Turner, Betty Hutton, Ann Miller, and Patricia Neal. And in the first chapter, All Too Human, I touch upon many other stars, including Spencer Tracy, Mary Pickford, Gloria Swanson, and on and on. It was, of course, a privilege to write about these legends, gaining an appreciation for how much they endured in their climb to the top, because, believe me, nothing was handed to them on a silver platter. I mean, you all have a sense of that, but all the research that I did, it really drives home the point. Then came the celebrity and the fame and what that does to a soul and the predictable problems with the Hollywood publicity machine often ginning up as many headaches as headlines, the two sometimes one and the same. Although in film's golden age, as my friend Ewing Miles Brown, whose family built the studio that would become Paramount Studios, often says, if the bosses directed that it stay inside the studio gates, it did. I reveal some of what stayed inside those imposing gates, ensconcing the dream factories, in my attempt to increase understanding of these stars, which you'll read. As Ron Masick, many of whom you know personally, or for his recurring roles in Sheriff Metzger in Murder, She Wrote, characterized it, my book tells inside stories about stars that the studios never shared. I could not put it down, he said, and have gained a new appreciation for them. So, in the amazing way that God brings good out of evil, these problems the studios often ginned up or exacerbated and then hid, in fact, were what led these stars to him. And while it might seem like I'm talking about them as a whole, what is fascinating is how, in fact, their life trajectories pretty much ran a predictable course. and similar course, pretty much like the dramas in which they starred with all the standard elements, the setup, the plot point, complication, and resolution. It's the drama of life. As Hemingway wrote, every man's life ends the same way, and it is only the details of how he lived and how he died that distinguishes one man from the other. The similar trajectory, as with a movie, ends in 2 hours. And it's in confronting our mortality. That's what's similar. And each star, rather than despairing as they realize their actual nothingness, found the healing salve of faith and sacramental grace. But the details are rich and varied. A few comments about each star. Alfred Hitchcock. Well, he was born into a devoutly Catholic, if irreverent, family, and he was the only one who, in my book, who did not undergo a religious conversion per se. I mean, the publisher insisted on keeping him. It's, you know, Franciscan media, and that's great. In the meantime, I had found Lana Turner. So he only made cameos in his film, so he's not a star. He's distinct in every way, as we all know anyway. As he became the legendary director he was, he drifted somewhat from the faith of his childhood, only to return poignantly so in the sunset of his life, when he reached out to a priest, Father Thomas James Sullivan, whom he had met while directing the Paradigm case in the mid-40s. Father Sullivan was priest to the stars and told a young friend, Father Mark Henninger, whom I interviewed for this book, he wants to come back home. Father Henninger joined him, Father Sullivan, on these visits with the master of suspense. The most remarkable sight, he wrote in the Wall Street Journal, where his brother Dan Henninger is a columnist, was that after receiving communion, he silently cried, tears rolling down his huge cheeks. Gary Cooper, elegantly handsome man, as you all know. Most gorgeous actor on the wall of A.C. Lyle's Wall of Stars. A.C. Lyle's. Do any of you know A.C. Lyle's? He gave the eulogy at Ann Miller's funeral. He was a longtime Paramount. You know A.C.? You knew A.C.? Anyway, Gary Cooper actually met A.C. when he was working in Jacksonville, was trying to come up, and wrote him a note because said, you know, we look forward to having A.C. at the studio. He once joked regarding Rhonda Fleming wanted him to write, to do his eulogy. He did all the stars' eulogies, and he said, I'll just check my calendar. But anyway, so A.C. met Coop in the early 30s, and as Coop rose in stardom, all the traps in the spiritual combat were perfectly laid to trip him up. But through grace, he surmounted them in perfect Cooper fashion. And it was not a deathbed conversion. No way, said his daughter Maria Cooper Janis. It was just eminently good timing, as with virtually every story in this book, especially Ann Miller. Because, in fact, he became ill about a year before after his conversion. Like Hemingway, he liked to carry a crucifix. When he was ill in the waning days of his life, he was talking with Hemingway's friend, A.E. Hotchner, clinging to his crucifix. Then dramatically, Coop asked Hotchner to tell Hemingway, his conversion was the best thing I ever did. At the CIC, I was asked about what spiritual books these stars read, did I know, and Coop read Peace of Soul. I hadn't remembered all the books that I put in, but Peace of Soul by Bishop Fulton J. Sheen and No Man is an Island by Thomas Merton. These and other spiritual classics gave him great solace, and the sacraments gave him great strength to withstand the agony of his final days, weeks and months, and see what was happening was God's will. That's what he was quoted as saying just before he died. Bob Hope, the entertainer to beat all entertainers, and when it came to the spiritual life, the drifter par excellence. In the end, he came face to face with his need for God. Like many in this book, it was a gradual process. During World War II, Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington, D.C., told me that Bob became very close to Cardinal Francis Spellman and was amazed that the troops gave him bigger applause than Spellman. That and the dedication of the troops got him thinking. Five decades later, he finally took the plunge. Mary Astor, lovely woman, who had a difficult childhood, always escaping. You know, she lived at the nearby motion picture TV home the last 15 years of her life. How did this happen, you might ask? Well, read my chapter. But briefly, not that the home isn't a lovely home, but I mean, she was a big star. You know, she should have had a big, she used to, when she went early on, her money went into buying the home that as Charlie Chaplin had rented in the Hollywood Hills. And there was a big glass, stained glass window of the tramp. So that's, you know, what she had come from, what she, her money had earned. And anyway, read my chapter. Briefly, her parents viewed her as a cash cow, and eventually she began escaping with alcohol, only to be rescued by God. She had a special devotion to St. Teresa of Lisieux, who was pivotal in her conversion, and she read her life story, among other books, including also Bishop Sheen's Peace of Soul and Thomas Merton's Seven Story Mountain. And she was very devoted to the Eucharist, realizing how much strength she derived from this beautiful sacrament. John Wayne, invincible, willful, loving, and saintly. He was actually quite saintly. And that's why I tried to demonstrate in some anecdotes in the chapter. His was a long journey to finding God, which played out dramatically to the very end. And while this is true of everyone, his story is particularly dramatic. He always considered himself an intellectual Catholic, his daughter-in-law Gretchen Wayne told me. During his marriage to Josephine Alicia Sans Wayne, he would talk to visiting priests into the wee hours about the Catholic faith with great sympathy and understanding. And there's a classic scene when a priest spotted him at the church on Balboa Island after they had moved to Newport Beach. And producer and writer A.J. Fennedy told me he saw him on his knees at Mass every morning while filming Chisholm in Durango. Yet he put off becoming, you know, a Catholic. That's the faith he loved. Then as he was nearing the end of his life after heart surgery in Boston, he was introduced to this this priest, St. Jose Maria Escriva de Balaguer, which some people might have heard. He was was a saint of ordinary work. And I find this anecdote absolutely amazing because if you boil down John Wayne, at his core is a good-hearted, hard worker. I mean, he actually wanted to just be a prop guy. And of course, in his waning hours of his life, he became Catholic. Anne Southern, the ultimate survivor. Watch her films and you get this about her. Read her faith journey and you'll understand what lies behind that gutsy exterior, a woman of character who found God and in so doing survived. Now, Hollywood was teeming with Catholics in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Leo McCarey, Frank Capra, John Ford, Fred Zinnemann, of course, Hitch, Claudette Colbert, Clark Gable, Spencer Tracy, Rosalind Russell, Ethel Barrymore, and on, which made it more likely that Anne would become a Catholic, as with so many in this book. It's important to keep that context in mind as you read Oasis. This book, of course, is the legends of Hollywood. There's many other people to write about. I started with these first 12. Today there's a similar phenomenon, and evangelical Christians are a huge force as well, as we know. Jane Wyman, hers was also a difficult childhood that bred in her a steely and quiet determination to succeed. She had a lot of problems rooted in her childhood, and when she found the Catholic faith fairly on, she was a changed woman and there was no turning back. Many people in Hollywood led her to the faith, including Loretta Young and her sister Sally Forrester, whom she attended Mass to, and she loved going to that Our Lady of the Angels Monastery in the Hollywood Hills, particularly. But her nanny was also an influence, and this is a story I only found out about in January. It was like 1 in 50 billion, and this is where, just before my mother got sick, she got sick and died suddenly. It was really... she was having some problems, and I said, what am I going to do with you? Without you, she's my best friend. She said, I'll be helping you from heaven. So I was visiting my cousins in San Francisco and just decided to stay at the Best Western when I got in that night to save some money. And the next morning, I got up and went to Mass and asked this person who actually ended up being good friends of my father's best friend, and I said, you know, I want to talk, I've been telling people about my book. He said, talk to the priest, and I talked to the priest, and who are you writing about? And I got to Jane Wyman and started blabbing about my story, and he said, and it was clear he had something to tell me. Well, his aunt was Jane Wyman's, was the nanny to Michael and Maureen Reagan, and she would go to Mass every morning. And finally, Jane Wyman, this is when their marriage became difficult, she finally said, what do you do every morning? You know, if it was in the 80s, you'd probably say, you know, somebody would be jogging every morning. So I go to Mass. And that, you know, made a deep impression because Jane Wyman, shortly thereafter, started, you know, really turning to the faith. Let's see. So, Susan Hayward. A redheaded fireball with acting talent on par with Sarah Bernhardt. You know, she got her Oscar for I Want to Live. It's going to be on TCM on May 4th, by the way. She was born into poverty in Brooklyn, New York, like her idol, Barbara Stanwyck. And she had an incredibly difficult childhood and identified with Bernhardt, who lost a leg. Hayward was terribly nearsighted, and as a child running to the street to rescue her Pennycut, she was hit by a car and disabled, ending up with a terrible limp because her leg was set improperly. Her father, a fallen away Catholic who never lived up to his wife's dreams of success, was loving but weak and died young. After many difficult years personally, she found human and spiritual love when she met Floyd Eaton Chalkley, a Southern gentleman, devout Catholic. But she died much too young, like her father, in her mid-50s. Always kept a black onyx crucifix, a gift of St. John, now St. John the 23rd. Last week I said Pope. St. John the 23rd, close by, gutsy, talented star. Lana Turner, she too had a difficult childhood. You see a pattern here. She became a Catholic at a young age on her own. After she was discovered and became the sweater girl, she grew up much too fast, and the problems only compounded. She did not make great choices in the husband department, but was always looking for love and stability in men. Then one day, late in life, she looked inward and found God. As she said, and this is one of the most insightful comments in all of my research, she knew God was within her because all the joy and love had to come from somewhere. We know where all the doubts and all the terrible things come from, but she knew that the joy and love, because she was so happy towards the end of her life. Betty Hutton, known for Annie, Get Your Gun, an extremely difficult childhood as well, really, but she was fiercely determined to escape poverty by using her talent, and did she ever. In unique Hutton fashion, in fact, but the problems continued to multiply. She was always looking for the father she never had. He had abandoned the family when she was 2, and then wired a suicide note with $100 when she was 18. As the priest who helped her turn her life around, Father Peter McGuire said, "You're just a hurt child." He tutored her, and she finished high school and later got her MA and taught. She also became a Catholic, not going anywhere without her rosary. She was so insecure, and her newfound faith gave her such confidence. She also overcame her addiction to prescription pills. Her story is a real example for what ails so many today, because I understand that's just, as common as the common cold, I guess. Ann Miller. She also had a difficult childhood and an incredible heart, and took her mother, who was legally deaf, under her wing, supporting her starting when she was 11 or 12. You know the film You Can't Take It With You? She was just 15. And God rewarded her when she met Father Pork Loftus. Well, when she was baptized, but that was part of the journey. As Father Loftus said, it's amazing, and you read in the book, it's just amazing how God works with small things, and how if this hadn't happened, this wouldn't happen. And what wouldn't happen was that she was baptized just before she died by Father Loftus. An amazing story. Patricia Neal. Now, she had a stable childhood. This book is bookended by stability. And like Hitch and Coop, Coop's very stable life as well early as a child. And everyone else in this book, she had incredible talent, but was always looking for love, robbed her innocence at an early age when she trusted the wrong guy. Then she fell in love with Gary Cooper, who healed that scar, but it was not a proper relationship, for which both suffered, including Cooper's family. But out of that love, out of that suffering, came a beautiful story of love, healing and forgiveness. Maria Cooper Janis, who had famously spat upon her when she was a kid or like a teenager because she had busted up the family, reached out to her with a gesture of forgiveness after she had that horrible stroke. I mean, she wrote a letter and said, I forgive you. It's just beautiful. And then she introduced her to Mother Dolores Hart. And she became a Catholic shortly before she died and was buried at the Abbey of Regina Laudis, where her best friend, Mother Dolores, lives in consecrated life. Read this story and you'll be moved and inspired. Read all these stories and I think you'll come away enriched. A note about the reading process, which is, of course, quite different from the writing process. But the two are complementary. As Charles Scribner Jr., whose grandfather first signed up F. Scott Fitzgerald, wrote, "Reading is a means of thinking with another person's mind. For learning purposes, there is no substitute for one human mind meeting another on the page of a well-written book," he said. "I hope my book will help you stretch your minds and warm your hearts, and now I commend to you Oasis and would be delighted to answer your questions." So... anyway, thank you. Thank you for your attention. So, does anybody have any questions, or have I answered? There's so much in this book, and I hope you'll have a chance to get a copy and read it. And yes.
Did you ever
Oh, so somebody asked me about him at the Catholic Information Center. Well, I think he's Catholic. He was Catholic. Yeah. So this this book, yeah, because I read about 12. So the criteria, it was a Catholic publisher. I was trying to actually find a secular publisher, but that was. But anyway, Frank Sinatra. So this criteria, so he didn't fit the criteria. But that would be an interesting story to write about. He was very compassionate. I know, I can't remember who it was, some woman, some star coming to town. He, you know, took her in and as a gesture of, you know, not trying to seduce her, but as a gesture of trying to help her get on her path. I can't remember. It was like a Susan Hayward, or what if it wasn't. Yeah, but I want to, because this is just the first in what I hope will be a number of books, and so he would be a good one. Thank you. Do you know anything? Do you want to tell me something that maybe is, have you read about it? Or is it?
I'm a fan of his.
You're a fan, oh, understandably, yeah. Very, very suave.
What about Grace Kelly?
Oh, Grace Kelly. Oh, she's, I think she became very spiritual towards the end of her life. I mean, she was, you know, kind of, you know, she lived the life, but I think she was always she always practiced her faith. I mean, we all fall, you know. But yeah, her absolutely in Philadelphia, absolutely. So no, that would hers. That's another guy. I should be taking notes. Well, I'm taping it, so I don't have to take notes. Yes.
I heard Alec Guinness.
Yes, Alec Guinness. He's in. I'm.
Grace Kelly.
The what now?
He converted.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
I heard it.
I don't.
He was on the set of some movies, and he wondered why didn't she hang around with everybody, so he went to a dressing room, and she was on her knees praying the rosary.
Oh, interesting. Well, his son Matthew had, and I can't remember, had some. Anyway, TB, I think. I don't. Anyway. Had some ailment, and he went and prayed, and he's, it was in the early 50s, and he said, he said to God, if you help him get better, I will not oppose him becoming a Catholic. And then gradually things happened in his life, like in the set of Father Brown, I can't remember the exact details, but some little boy came up to him, and I don't know, something, some spiritual, I mean, I wrote about it, it's really funny, but beautiful story, and he every morning he said these psalm, a beautiful psalm, which I can't quote verbatim, but so no, he was beautiful story, and he's, I'm going to write about him next for sure. Yeah.
How did you choose the title Oasis?
Oh, well, actually the initial title was Oasis of Faith in Hollywood, and my author. It's, I'm jet lagged. Remember, it's right now. It's 10:11 for me. I'm body clock time. My publisher liked Oasis, but I guess maybe they didn't like Oasis of Faith in Hollywood. Like, is there an Oasis of Faith in Hollywood? Isn't Hollywood where the source of all evil? I don't know what they thought. So that was my Oasis, and the reason I had chosen Oasis, that concept, is because Hollywood people. The reason Hollywood became a magnet was because it was an oasis of health. So that was the concept of that there's physical health and there's spiritual health. And the oasis that these stars found, many of them in Hollywood. I mean, you know, as I say, the problems are actually God uses, brings good out of evil. So, you know.
You were talking about, was it Alec Guinness who was on the set of...
Father Brown. Yeah, okay. Do you want to tell me that story? This little, you know, if you Google my... Wait, I Google my article. I'm going to Google my article, and I'll find, but I'm not going to do it right now. I'll do it after. I wrote an article about, I wrote it was the 100th anniversary of his birth on April 14th or April 2nd, 2014. So that I wrote this article. It's funny, you know, you write things and you can't remember everything you've written. So if anybody, next question, and while you're asking the question, I'll Google this. So,
what about Kenneth Moore, who actually played Father Brown, was he?
Kenneth Moore. Somebody's mentioned him to me. I'm not really that familiar. I believe I'll have to look into that one. Yeah.
He played Father Brown.
Uh-huh.
In
Is he a British actor?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Somebody absolutely mentioned some that I should look into him. He was very devout Catholic. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to distract here, but I apologize. Let's see, Google. How does this work? Oh. So yeah, but these are all really good suggestions. So I don't want to, yes.
These people that you write about, the other ones you've researched, who converted, did they, when they left this earth, did they leave any of their great wealth to their faith?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, certainly, I think the hopes, absolutely. I mean, I don't know specifically, but I'm sure, you know, they were great benefactors, and I touch upon that in my chapter. Let me see, who else? Well, Mary Astor didn't have great wealth, because you'll read and you'll understand why. I have to think about that. I'm sure, I think the hopes are the prime example of that, yeah. Good question, though. Good question, yeah, because that would really, that would really, yeah, put it, yeah, would that would be a big evidence. But a lot of them, because of having gone through, you know, crises, maybe weren't that well, you know, the money that they had. I mean, Mary Astor had made millions. And, oh, Betty Hutton was, you know, millions. But, boy, she just really, you know, bottomed out. She, prescription, you know, she on The Greatest Show on Earth is when she really started taking the drugs. I surmise it's because she injured herself. And also she had to stay really thin for that show. And she was like Judy Garland. I mean, you have a pep me up. And, well, she was like the Air Force, you know, pilots that they're taking. It must be good and not good for an actor, you know, with that personality. Maybe an Air Force pilot can handle it, but not an emotional actor. So, well, I'll get the Alec Guinness thing maybe afterwards. I'm not real adept. I'm about as adept with my computer as I am making judgments about whether MapQuest is reliable. But anyway, I'm not gonna. So, any other questions?
What about Paul Scofield?
Paul Scofield. Now, was he Catholic?
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm just asking. Yes. He played.
Oh yeah, that's a good. I see what you're. You know, like for instance, the composer Franz is it. You know, for like the films, The Beautiful Composer, I think there's stories about people who have entered into sort of having to compose for like Our Lady of Fatima, The Miracle of Our Lady of Fatima, or Song of Bernadette, Franz Waxman. Yeah, so I think there are stories. I don't know if he converted, but certainly it's very moving and inspiring when you have to like enter into that world. And that's a good thought. Let me see if I can find this real quickly, because I'll read to you real quickly the story about Father Brown, which is so interesting. I just had to Google Alec Guinness and Mary Claire Kendall. Oh boy. Alec, let's see, Guinness and Mary. Just bear with me, I'm sorry. Mary there. But that's so interesting about Grace Kelly. I'm sure, you know, there's never like just one thing. It could be, it's kind of like sort of when you're trying to open up a jar, you know, and then somebody comes along and I've been trying for, you know, let's see. I've been trying. So it's a lot of people that that contribute. So here, let's see. Okay, here's the Father Brown, okay, story. But, okay, come on, little gizmo. Don't go blank on me. Okay. Let me see, it'll turn. Okay. Let's see. Father Brown. And the last Mute Witness. Okay. Okay, so here it is. His last film was Mute Witness, 1994, in which fittingly he played the Reaper, a mystery guest star. There was, of course, more to the man than his acting, a taste of which is conveyed in his poignant faith journey, the dramatic turning point occurring during the filming of Father Brown, when a small French child mistook Guinness for a priest. That little encounter inspired him to return to his Anglican faith. Soon thereafter, His son Matthew, then just 11, tragically contracted polio and was paralyzed from the waist down. A grief-stricken Guinness began stopping by a little Catholic church every day, praying to God that if he would let his son recover, he would not stand in the way should his son wish to convert to Catholicism, which was his son's desire. This needed to be edited. Anyway, Matthew did recover, subsequently converting to Catholicism at age 15. Several years later, seeing how happy his son was, Guinness decided to become a Catholic himself and was formally received into the church on March 24, 1956. A year later, his wife, Marula, quietly followed suit while he was away in Sri Lanka filming The Bridge on the River Kwai. She only told him after the fact, to his great delight. Every morning Guinness recited a verse from Psalm 143, "Cause me to hear your loving kindness in the morning." So, anyway, cause it. That's pretty easy. I should have remembered that. But I'm working on this chapter now. I've already written your grandfather's chapter, but I'm, draft. If for another, installment in the Oasis series. So, did we lose Father Loftus? Did he have to leave?
He's writing his story about becoming a saint.
Is he going to come back, or he needed to leave?
No, he had to.
Oh, okay. I'll call him. Anyway, I don't mean to be too long-winded here, but this is really interesting questions. So who else? I mean, you're just helping me write my next book. who else? Or did anyone else have a question or comment or?
Will the criteria for your next book be a little different from?
Oh yeah, definitely. As I said, I tried to find a secular publisher because I'd like to expand it so that I don't have to just go. Well, the Catholic faith is beautiful. I've gained so much from it, but obviously there's a bigger, wider universe out there. So I'd like to maybe include some of the stars who weren't necessarily who are different religions, like Jimmy Stewart was Presbyterian, or I could do something besides stars. I was thinking I have other ideas, but somebody suggested I should write about the younger stars. But it's hard to get people to talk about their spiritual life while they're living, which somebody helpfully pointed out last week, you can't talk to them when they're dead. And I said, I don't know, a lot of relatives have told me you do a really good job channeling my relative.
Which younger stars would you think about?
Oh, there are a lot. Let's see. The big actor, and I always forget his name, of course, Mark Wahlberg. He has an incredible story. And there are a bunch. And there's, younger's relative. I mean, yeah. Living. Martin Sheen, if he would deign to talk to me. It's hard, but let's see. It's almost anybody, I'm told by my friend Father C. John McCloskey, who's converted a lot of really famous people, like Larry Kudlow, and just a second, that anybody who's practicing their faith now in Hollywood has had a conversion story. So... anyway, you have a question?
No, I was going to say, there might be other actors. I don't know if they're Catholic or not. Anthony Quinn.
Oh, Anthony Quinn, yes.
Gilbert
Rowland, okay.
Gene Kelly,
absolutely. Yeah. Somebody came to me to write a book about Hollywood in the 50s because it was just really a very vibrant Catholic community.
During the 40s and 50s, these great stars were the great stars. What was the atmosphere at their studios? Were they open about their faith, or did they keep it very private?
Well, I think faith is, spiritual things are really private. Now today we kind of let it all hang out, but I think there wasn't like this, I think it was just more, respectful if you're, whatever your faith is.
It wasn't Facebook.
Yeah, there wasn't a Facebook version of, so I think now we're just, it's a different world, obviously. I don't think wearing your religion on your sleeve is, because you're in the secular world, you're acting, you're not a priest, unless you play a priest, you know, like Spencer Tracy. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of talking off the top of my head, too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there were big studio meetings. Of, yes, Joe.
I was under the impression that they had a chapel at MGM, and they all lived there, pumping those movies out, and I think they had their own chapel.
Really? That is so interesting.
They all lived there.
Oh, my. Isn't that... Well, you know, Joe is the grandson of Spencer Tracy. So you have the good source of information there.
They ate every meal together. They ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the commissary, and they went to church on Sunday, and they made 7 movies a year.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Wow. I'd love to talk to you more about that.
All the stars, all the lead actors at MGM, they have pictures of them eating together every single day.
Yeah.
And they just squat.
But you're saying, like, that Catholic community, that little Catholic, like...
I believe I've seen clips of the chapel at MGM back there.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That is interesting. We'll have to talk more about that. Yeah, and you know, the John Ford, he had that little... what was it? It was in Reseda, his farm, and then he took the chapel and then moved it to the motion picture television home, which is right here in Woodland Hills. So there's a John Ford chapel there, which I haven't visited yet. But
it's a nice little chest.
Yeah. So, well, this is fun. This is great. Any more questions? Any more stars? Yes.
Was there any story that surprised you?
Oh, that's a good question. Lana Turner. I think she's really surprising. I had no idea. I mean, the only reason I found her is because I was looking for a replacement for Hitch. Of course, he would like that because he liked blondes. And I just found that I couldn't believe she converted to Catholicism when she was a kid. And so I thought, oh, this is great. I mean, because Lana Turner, she had like 8 husbands. So I thought, boy, wow. And then I found this clip of her being interviewed. It was her last interview. She was very reclusive towards the end of her life. Last 10 years, not the end of her life. But, so she only granted to this guy, the rich and famous. And now my jet lag is going to show me that it's going to manifest itself.
The British guy?
Yeah, the British guy. My jet lag. But anyway, that British guy. Sorry. Incredible interview. That's where I got these quotes. Incredible interview about how spiritual she was. Oh, and he, you know, my power partner. I mean, just go on, just on YouTube and Lana Turner, and there's just is a
Robin Leach.
Yes, Robin Leach. Thank you. Okay, I have. But yeah, this it's 11 o'clock hour for me, so. Exactly, Robin Leach. It's an incredible interview. Just Google it. It just knocks your socks off. Lana Turner, who was, you know, the glamour queen, and just had jewels. Jewels was, you know, draped in jewels, and not particularly spiritual, you would think, but incredible. What other stories surprised me, Betty? Let's see, what other stories? Mary Astor. I didn't expect to find that Mary Astor was an alcoholic. not at all. But and then just read that chapter, you'll just be absolutely blown away. But they all kind of surprise me. I mean, when you learn about people and their lives, I mean, it's just really interesting. It's all surprising.
Have you ever heard of religious in
any way? I don't. You can probably. I don't know. I don't know that she was. I don't claim any great knowledge about Katharine Hepburn. Actually, I just got 4 of her books out of the biography, so I do want to delve into her life. But I think she was, she was just very self-reliant. And from the beginning of my remarks, you have to be spiritual, you have to turn to God and realize you need help. But I think she was just really, you know, accomplished, and that was her thing. Her.
You know, the fact that Spencer Tracy was Catholic that stopped them from really getting together, whatever.
Well, I think that was a part of it. But anyway, We'll save that for the next book. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciated the opportunity to speak to you. And thank you. You're the diehards, because it's hot out. My car doesn't... this is the second rental car that doesn't have air conditioning. So I know how hot it is. So anyway, so thank you for coming. I guess we're going to have a reception. And I hope so. Okay, thanks.